Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn. And for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, we will be reviewing, finding out more about, if you already know, maybe you don't, you will learn about liquefied natural gas and how it relates to the Columbia Pacific region and Oregon in general. I'm very fortunate today to have in the studio Dan Sears. Dan is the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Donna.
Very happy to have you here today. And I think we're going to start with finding out some information about you, and then we will look at the background on what LNG is and why it is an important thing for folks to know about in this community and beyond. So, Dan, please tell the listening audience a bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I am the conservation director with Columbia Riverkeeper. In that role, I track a huge range of issues from the Hanford nuclear site to water pollution down the main stem of the Columbia to the many fossil fuel proposals, fossil fuel export proposals in the Columbia River estuary. And liquefied natural gas is the issue that actually brought me into Riverkeeper. It was something that I was tracking while living in Southern Oregon. And through working on it, I met Brent Foster, our former director, and our current executive director, Brett Vandenhoevel, and the rest of the Riverkeeper team. I was born and raised in Oregon, and I think no issue has really encapsulated for me why Oregonians care so much about our salmon, about our rivers, and our way of life as this LNG fight that's been going on for 12 years. So it's always great to be back in Astoria and talking with people who've really been educating me for over a decade on what it means to live and work in the Columbia River estuary.
What is the mission of Columbia Riverkeeper?
Our mission is to protect and restore the Columbia River from the headwaters to the mouth. And obviously right here, we're at the mouth of the Columbia River, and from all over the western part of North America, we reap the benefits and sometimes the negative impacts of decisions that are made throughout the Columbia River Basin. So here in the lower Columbia, this is the linchpin for salmon recovery. And all of the impacts that we've had throughout the Columbia River Basin on salmon really are dealt with right here in the estuary in one way or another. And so for us, the Columbia River estuary is where we put a lot of our focus, and it's obviously a place that faces a lot of threats right now.
I think actually a lot of people maybe aren't familiar with what the estuary is. Why don't you just talk about what because it exists only here. Only here is the Columbia River estuary. The Columbia River is around, 1,300 miles
That's
long?
Right.
But the estuary is just here.
Yeah, this is the place, below Bonneville Dam, particularly, below Longview, where the Columbia River becomes a very natural place and a place where salmon are making that critical life change between freshwater and saltwater. And from, scientists tell us, the conservation groups have been working for decades on this. We spend billions of dollars in trying to protect and restore the estuary because it is so important to keep this intact habitat functioning and improving in order to make sure that salmon are restored all throughout the Columbia River system. In the days when, in the future, when we manage to get salmon again in the upper reaches of the Columbia River, it's going to be because we've managed to keep those salmon healthy here in the Columbia River estuary.
Astoria was once the salmon canning capital of the world. And, of course, we know that that isn't the case today. What we do have, though, we still have a vibrant fishing community. We still have people who make a living from the salmon who are here. And so it is a valuable economic resource in our community. I guess we should also talk about what liquefied natural gas is for those folks who may not know what it is.
Yeah, and so here in the estuary, people have been dealing with the threat of huge proposed liquefied natural gas terminals for over 10 years. At one point, there were four different proposals to import liquefied natural gas into the Columbia River estuary and pipe it all over the western United States. So what liquefied natural gas is, it's methane gas that's super cooled down to negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit. At that temperature, it goes to about 1/600 its volume, and it becomes this cryogenic liquid that can be shipped over very long distances. So when this all began in late 2004, Oregon LNG was selling a plan. It was calling itself, well, it was Calpine at that point, which is now bankrupt. It was selling a plan to import natural gas from overseas in this liquefied natural gas form, and then to ship that throughout the western U.S. It did, you know, it managed to get a lease from the Port of Astoria and the state of Oregon in the dead of night in 2004. And ever since then, it's faced absolutely stalwart opposition from people throughout the Columbia River Estuary, opposition that's actually been building over 10 years rather than flagging, which is an amazing feat. For the folks who've been involved with this, it's been a sustained, organized, and inspiring fight. The high point of liquefied natural gas work, you know, one could think of it as being 2010 when the Bradwood LNG project went bankrupt. So Oregon LNG isn't alone. It was the first actually into the estuary, and Bradwood came shortly after and was very aggressive and pushed a proposal 26 miles upriver near Bradwood, Oregon, right across from Puget Island, Washington, that would have decimated a very critical area for salmon habitat. A place called Clifton Channel, where they would have done a deep dredging and industrialized a place that is absolutely, it's one of the most important places for salmon in the entire Columbia River system. Similarly, Oregon LNG still plans to push forward with a huge dredging operation in Warrenton, also in a very important salmon habitat, right at sort of the head of Young's Bay, you know, sort of the gateway to Young's Bay and Warrenton. And Young's Bay, as many people know, is part of the Selective Area Fisheries Enhancement Program. And so it's an area that's it's very, very important for commercial fishing and gill netting in Young's Bay. And so to dredge a huge hole right at the head of that, it could have a dramatically negative impact on all the Chinook salmon that migrate out of Young's Bay in a very productive net pen fishery. Right through the place where Oregon LNG would be.
This is a much bigger issue than just salmon. Obviously, we're talking about salmon right now, but there are so many impacts that would happen from a huge, massive LNG terminal here in the mouth of the Columbia River. And it began as an import terminal because we need this fossil fuel. We need this fuel. And then suddenly they switched and now they want to be?
Export. Exactly. This has been one of the biggest bait and switches you'll ever see. For almost a decade, for 8 years, or maybe not quite that long, these companies were pushing the idea that the sky was falling, we're running out of natural gas, and we needed to be importing methane from overseas. And then at the flip of a switch, they suddenly decided, oh, well, we actually intend to export natural gas from fracking that's going on all over North America. And so what we have here in the estuary is really a huge mega energy proposal, something that would induce fracking now in the middle of North America and ship liquefied natural gas from the United States and Canada overseas to higher priced overseas markets. And that's something that was not part of the bargain when these guys first came to town. And really, we saw ourselves as a backdoor between LNG supplies from overseas and California, which was looking at importing LNG much more than Oregon. So now where we sit is, you know, 10 years plus into this fight, the companies that were telling us that we were running out of natural gas are now saying we have so much natural gas that we need to liquefy it and ship it overseas. And I think at this point, people in the estuary and people throughout the region can't take these companies at their word, and they don't. And all over Oregon and Washington, people are coming to the conclusion that it's time to keep these fossil fuels in the ground. And liquefied natural gas is one of the biggest opportunities we have to make a real impact on the amount of fossil fuel that gets burned.
It's modern-day colonialism.
It is, very much. And if you've seen the way the LNG industry has inserted itself into Clatsop County was pretty aggressive and not entirely above board, where Oregon LNG obtained its lease in Warrenton under conditions of official misconduct at the time by the port director, the port president. And, you know, that was found to be true by the Attorney General of Oregon, then Attorney General John Kroger. And so what we're dealing with now is sort of the aftermath, where we're stuck with this company that simply won't go away.
Well, eventually, though, you all believe it will go away, and
oh, so
do a lot of people, because the opposition is mounting, because more and more people in Oregon, it appears, and throughout the Northwest are saying, wait, this is not a good idea for Oregon or for the United States. It's not even the right direction that people should be going in.
Yeah, the idea of turning the Columbia River estuary into a mega hub for shipping fracked natural gas overseas is just... it's beyond counterintuitive. It's something that Oregonians and Washingtonians are rejecting. They're standing up to it. And we're seeing that momentum build even as other fossil fuel proposals come into the Columbia River. Proposals to ship oil overseas, proposals to ship coal overseas. Liquefied natural gas was the first. It really woke everybody up to the fact that the Columbia River could become not a superhighway for salmon, but rather a superhighway for dirty fossil fuels being shipped all over the world. And so here, as we work to protect this very important place to all of us, we're having an even bigger impact than maybe we realize. We're having an impact of keeping these dirty fossil fuels in the ground, and that's an opportunity for us that many other places don't have, to have a real impact on the amount of climate-changing fuel that comes down the river.
Well, there are so many reasons why there's a lot of opposition to Oregon LNG. And so for folks maybe who came late to this and don't know, thanks for giving the background on that. Obviously, the salmon, the fishing, there's safety. There are huge safety issues, property rights issues, climate change issues, how it would affect local businesses. There are so many impacts. And even the city of Astoria created a resolution. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that happened in 2015 that really shows the growing and mounting opposition. You know, after over 10 years of dealing with this LNG project, the city of Astoria decided it was time to take a position and to weigh in. And the position that the city took is very direct and very representative of where people are in this community. And what they identified is the risk to not just the salmon estuary, but the culture and the business community that's here that relies on a healthy river. And the proposal to turn what's called the East Skipanon Peninsula in Warrenton into this mega terminal would have impacts that ramify throughout the estuary. And the city identified those. The city of Astoria is in the danger zone for this project. If there were a large leak of LNG, you know, that vapor could drift into Astoria, and the city identified those public safety issues. The city of Astoria would be faced with a lot of the traffic from building this thing. And obviously the city would be impacted by the negative environmental consequences of operating what would be one of the largest LNG ports in the world here in the Lower Columbia River. So it was a very encouraging statement in September of 2015 that really, you know, staked out a position that a lot of people support. And the city's not alone. They're actually following the example of communities like Vernonia, Oregon, who beat the city to the punch because the pipeline for Oregon LNG would cut through Oregon's rugged coastal range and, you know, threaten eminent domain against Oregon families, cut a swath through forests and over steep slopes prone to landslides, through rivers and streams that people are working hard to restore and protect, again, for salmon, but also for drinking water. The city of Vernonia is concerned that the pipeline would cut through its drinking water source and foul the water for the city there in that very unique little pocket in the Coast Range. And so Astoria is following the example of many others, and it goes all the way across to Forest Grove. When the pipeline went near Forest Grove, they opposed it. Even the city of Malala, not a bastion of environmental radicalism by any means, took a stand on this issue because of its impact on private property rights. And the same goes for communities in Marion and Yamhill counties. It's been a groundswell for over 10 years, and a coalition that encompasses not just people who care about salmon and fishing, from commercial fishermen to sports fishermen to tribal fishermen, but also people who care about forests, both in terms of the ecology of these forests, but also these working timber farms that would be cut through. And that's why the Small Woodlands Association came out in opposition to Oregon LNG many years ago. In many respects, rural Oregonians have been the vanguard of opposition to what would be the largest fossil fuel projects we've ever seen in the Northwest.
It's kind of ironic in a way, isn't it? That, I mean, the battle continues. It is not going away, although there is kind of sometimes I think there's a perception that, oh, you know, gosh, Bradwood was defeated and Bradwood went bankrupt. And so now Oregon LNG, yeah, they're gone, aren't they? No, they're not. And so your job then at Columbia River Keeper is to let more people know this is still an ongoing situation which requires people to still be engaged and involved.
Yeah, we can't rest until Oregon LNG decides not to push this project any further, until they're absolutely denied by local, state, and federal officials, and until their investors see that there is no path forward for this project.
Right. These are out-of-town investors, and we're going to talk more about that in the second half of the show. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today in the studio, I have Dan Sears. He is the conservation director for Columbia River Keeper, working very hard on the Columbia River estuary, on water issues, on fossil fuel issues. What I look at when I think of, you know, the economy in the Columbia Pacific region is I think we all are in favor of economic development. However, economic development that is compatible with the natural resources, the heritage and the culture of this area. And of course, obviously, LNG would dramatically change that environment. Who is making the decisions, and how are people engaged on an ongoing basis? I know that there is obviously there's Columbia River Keeper. There are also in this Columbia Pacific region, there's Columbia Pacific Common Sense, which is an organization which has meetings the third Thursday of each month at Three Cups Coffee right in Astoria by the bridge. And anyone is welcome to come to that meeting. Is it 6 o'clock or something?
Usually 6 o'clock.
6 p.m. The third Thursday of each month at Three Cups is where Columbia Pacific Common Sense has a meeting. So people are still having to be involved in this, and I don't know about hearings that are upcoming, but why haven't decisions been made so far, and where are we in the decision-making process, Dan?
So LNG is an unusual beast in that there are decisions that need to be made at local, state, and federal levels. But keep in mind that underpinning all of this are the people who live here. We are the decision makers. As long as we are staunchly opposed to this, as long as we refuse to allow this to move forward, it won't happen. And that's, if I make anything clear about the decision-making process, is that we ultimately are the decision makers. We elect the people who make these decisions, and we influence the people who regulate this industry. And so at the local level, Clatsop County voted 5-0 against the pipeline for Oregon LNG. They turned it down. And that decision was upheld by the Land Use Board of Appeals, and it's a done deal. It's not under any legal appeal.
So you would
appeal.
Think they wouldn't even be able to proceed with that decision in place.
Exactly. And so Oregon LNG is hoping that they can challenge that decision by the local agency once it becomes a decision adopted by the state of Oregon. So that kicks us up one level to state regulators. And they are also in the process of reviewing this project. And there's just an absolute basket full of permits that Oregon LNG would need to obtain. Long story short, a few key agencies, the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and a couple of others, the Department of State Lands, have critical decisions that they will have to make. And if they say no, regardless of what happens with the federal government, this project can't move forward. And so the key person who influences all of these agencies is Governor Kate Brown. She is right at the tip of the pyramid in terms of influencing all of these decisions that will shape whether or not Oregon LNG happens. And so after 10 years, we're on our third governor who's looking at these projects, and she hasn't staked out her position yet on LNG. When it was an LNG import proposal, she indicated that she did not support LNG import. Now that it's LNG export and there is another proposal in Coos Bay, she's been much more cautious as governor. And so she is a person that needs to hear from everyone in Clatsop County that this is one of the most important issues to people who live here, who work here, who visit here, that people who care about the Columbia River estuary care about stopping Oregon LNG.
Actually, Dan, you know what? This goes far beyond this region because Astoria, because of its singular history as the oldest U.S. settlement west of the Rockies, is known throughout the world. I mean, Lewis and Clark, I mean, the history here is huge. This is a rare place. It doesn't exist anywhere else. And there are so many reasons why it is not a good fit for this area. And therefore, it is right now, it is really imperative that local folks get in touch with the governor and explain this, and also people who care, who are from outside this region, who understand that as there is so much change happening in the world, that there is a treasure here which must be protected.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the strategies we've used to get our message to the governor is packing hearings and making sure that her agency folks see us all the time. Whenever they visit town, whenever they're holding important hearings about LNG, we're there. We also go to Salem. And in 2015, we held the biggest rally to date about LNG. In May of 2015, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. came and spoke alongside some very conservative rural landowners. It's not a combination you see very often. And along with tribal representatives who came a very long way to support the restoration and protection of salmon in the Columbia River. And so this combination was trying to send a message to Governor Brown that welcome to your new role as governor, and we hope that you make the right decision on LNG, and we'll be here as often as we need to make sure you do.
The reason you think a decision hasn't been made yet is just because with all of the different state agencies that have to be involved, is things just take a very long time, and Oregon LNG keeps suing or dragging things out. I mean, why hasn't this been resolved after over a decade?
Yeah, Oregon LNG has deep pockets, apparently, and is willing to keep throwing money at this proposal, even though it appears to be a dead end. For instance, Oregon LNG is suing the Army Corps right now because the Army Corps holds a property right, an easement over the entire site of the proposed LNG terminal. This is the stuff of, you know, absurdity. I mean, it's hard to imagine a proposal like this going on for 10 years when the property itself is encumbered by being a dredge disposal site to maintain the Columbia River shipping channel and navigation in the area. That just gives you a sense for how persistent Oregon LNG has been. Despite that, the opposition has been even more persistent. It's like they're running this proposal in reverse. You know, they have less support and less traction than they ever have. And our goal in coming months is to see that this project falls apart altogether.
In 2016.
That's right. And the way we get there is by emphasizing the issues that we're passionate about.
How can people get involved? Obviously, they can come the third Thursday of each month to Three Cups Coffee and meet with some of the very nice and friendly folks at the Columbia Pacific Common Sense meeting. If somebody's just moved to town, they don't know about this issue, they've heard about it perhaps. That's one way. And how do you all have your presence known, Columbia Riverkeeper? I mean, what kinds of things do you do in Portland? And even I think you're engaged with Fisher Poets here. What are the things that you do to let the public know what's happening?
You know, we regularly hold hikes and walks out on the site of where Oregon LNG would be located because it's public land. We all own it, and there are trails that run all through the site. Again, not the sort of thing you would expect to find in the middle of a huge LNG export terminal proposal. We're at Fisher Poets, so we try to have a presence there every year. And, you know, those meetings every month are kind of the backbone where people come and find out what's going on at Three Cups Coffee and get plugged in. Columbia River Keeper, you know, we do events and presentations and hikes. Sometimes we get out on the river, all up and down the Columbia River, and we really encourage people to get plugged in with us because working with the great local volunteers with Columbia Pacific Common Sense, we have formed what is an envious coalition for a lot of folks to look at in its breadth and diligence in terms of keeping the Columbia River LNG free. In 2004 and 2005, when this started, meetings were very different than they are now. In that, I think people felt a sense of desperation and that these huge energy schemes were coming in and would be able to impose themselves on the will of a community that's somewhat rural, somewhat small, doesn't always get listened to in Salem and the other power centers of the state. And through force of organizing and communicating and networking with one another, people here have stood their ground and they've pushed back, and LNG is not going to happen and the Columbia River. We want to make 2016 the year it officially is off the books.
And one of the things I have great respect for about the Columbia Riverkeeper and all the different coalitions who are involved in this is you have scientists. You're working with biologists. You're working with people who have studied this, with engineers, with people who are familiar with this. This isn't, I mean, there are the people who are really raising the alarm and saying, you know, to all of us who live here, this is a very bad idea. And look, we have done all of this research. There's so much work that's gone into this, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we did was last year was commission expert reports where we had experts look at the claims that Oregon LNG was making about its impact on the estuary, where the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and Oregon LNG are very difficult to distinguish. They seem to speak with the same voice about, oh, the impacts will be minimal and we can mitigate whatever impact would happen. In response to that, we looked for independent experts who could come in and really vet the project. And what we found is that there would be an enormous negative impact on Chinook salmon that migrate out of Young's Bay, an enormous negative impact on water quality, not just in the Columbia River, but also in all the streams and rivers that we cross by the pipeline. And then we reached out to people who really know these issues very well. And what we're finding is that the smart folks at the Oregon state agencies who are reviewing this and the experts who are looking at this, for them, Oregon LNG's claims fall apart. And in no place is that more obvious than the siting of this project in what is widely known to be an unstable spit of, you know, dredge disposal on the Columbia River. And well-known
Cascadia subduction zone.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And the well-known local geologist, Tom Horning, is one of the folks who's testified that this project couldn't be put in any more reckless place than exactly where they've proposed to locate it.
So, Dan, I'm so grateful you were able to be here today and give us kind of an overview on what's happened and what is happening. So, are you encouraged, in spite of the fact that still people must be engaged and involved, the fight continues, it's not a done deal, it's not over yet, it's that persistence and perseverance. I mean, it is the David and Goliath kind of thing. However, it sounds like even though it's gone on for a very long time, more and more people are saying, this must go away, this is not a good thing. And so are you encouraged at this point?
I am, because the fight that we've started here is spreading all over the Northwest, where people in Vancouver, Washington are fighting an oil terminal. People in Longview, Washington are fighting a coal terminal. People here in Astoria and Warrenton are fighting an LNG terminal. And so all over the Northwest, people are standing up to the fossil fuel industry and realizing that our geography is our destiny, that we have a disproportionate impact on the amount of fossil fuels that will be burned and on our ability to protect and restore salmon. And this is really a critical time. And so I encourage people to get engaged in this groundswell that's happening throughout the region. Together, we're making an enormous impact. And we don't always see it when we go to a hearing or a meeting. But one by one, we're like committees of correspondence spread all over the Northwest. And we're going to bring an end to LNG export in the Columbia River and across the Northwest.
Every person makes a difference.
That's right.
Every person. Dan, thank you so much for being here today and for all the incredibly hard work you've been doing for, again, over a decade. If you want to know more information about Columbia Riverkeeper, the website is?
ColumbiaRiverkeeper.org.
And you're based in Hood River, traveling up and down the Columbia River estuary on a frequent basis. And then again, there are those meetings on the third Thursdays of each month at Three Cups Coffee in Astoria at 6 p.m.
The joke is I'm based in my Subaru driving up and down the Columbia River.
Yes, so. Yes, I imagine so. Well, thank you for continuing on.
Thank you very much,
Don Quixote. We must continue tilting at windmills. And I want to thank all of you who listen to Talk of Our Towns. And Kate Brister was the engineer for today. And my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. That will oxygenate your body and give you the ability to cope with all the different stresses of life. And there are many. Focus on those things which make you feel good, which are working in your life. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you and for doing the best you can for being here now in the only moment which exists on this earth, the now moment, and appreciating the amazing planet we call Earth.